message from Daisuke Kotagawa, Research Director of the Cannon Institute of Global Studies. I would like to extend a deep congratulations for your 30th anniversary meeting in New York on June 15th. At this crucial time of history, it is so important that unselfish people work together towards common welfare of all people on Earth. It is well known from our experience in the late 1990s that recovery from an economic crisis triggered by financial crisis requires special subscription. A cleaning of banking systems with substantial changes in management of major banks and with the pursuit of responsibility of managements is a precondition for bailout banks and restoring confidence in the financial system. A fundamental streamlining of the financial system by the reintroduction of the Glass-Steagall Act is essential to avoiding the repetition of mistakes made by Wall Street to gamble on depositors' money. A battle against Wall Street is an urgent task for us to defend our lives. After restoration of confidence in the financial system, a large scale of fiscal stimulus is necessary to create real demand and increase the welfare of the whole world. One example is the idea of the new canal at the Kula Narrows in Thailand. We sometimes call it the Cryo Canal. Financial resources have to be mobilized for such purposes rather than gambling by Wall Street. Powers have to be brought back to Main Street and Main Streets across the world from Wall Street. I hope that you will win that battle soon. Best regards, Daisuke Kotagawa. Well, we have a representative from an actual state legislature in the actual United States who's actually doing that. You know, they're few and far between. At least those have the courage to come and speak to a conference such as this, though, of course, as Keisha's already said, that doesn't mean that you're a hero. It just means you're an American. And so I'd like to introduce an American, Andrea Boland, state senator from Maine.
Thank you very much. I don't deserve all that much credit. I was introduced to the fight for Glass-Steagall in my own legislature. We passed a resolution memorializing the Congress of the United States and the President to return to the law of Glass-Steagall. And I knew something about it, a little bit about it, and certainly I had a vivid memory of when I first heard on the news that it had been disposed of. I remember I heard it on the news. I was waking up in the morning, and I thought, what on earth are they doing? And it was funny. That moment in time just stayed with me. And then I was at a conference in Atlanta, the National Conference of State Legislatures, on a different issue, and I was there also to support Glass-Steagall in another committee. But what happened there was that the state senator from Delaware, who was there to present a resolution to, this is the largest conference of state legislatures in the country, to return to Glass-Steagall, and had stood up to the banks for some time with great courage and determination, finally succumbed to their pressure there in Atlanta. And for some reason, I was recognized as someone that might be able to pick up that banner, which I did, happily. I have taken on some other big industries in Maine, and so this wasn't any different, and I knew it was important. What was interesting is that it was a very fair resolution. It was modest, I would say, and I knew there were others, too, that would back me up because it was somewhat organized, well organized, really. So that's what we did, and what was stunning to me is the number of legislators who did not stand up for it. And that That was really troubling, but it also was an indication of how powerful the lobbyists are that are in the employ of what we now refer to as the banksters. It was really something, and it was troubling. And luckily, all my fellow Mainers did stand with me on that. But that was the beginning of my introduction to more deep thought about this. But certainly, I had been looking at the effects in the state legislature as more and more we were abandoning some of our commitments to pensions and health insurance, welfare of those most in need, and understanding that we just didn't have the dollars and couldn't get them. Also problems about economic development. We didn't have the roads that we really should have. Of course, Maine is kind of a uniquely problematic place. It's got a small population and many, many miles of roads. But anyway, at this time, I just was happy to accept the invitation to speak to you and share with you a little bit of what I do know now. And that is that we're just, you know, hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars away from being a successful society. And the money that is being spent on such things as derivatives and mortgage-backed securities that are traded and retraded is depriving us of the most basic things that we need in our society. While China has built 12,000 miles of high-speed rail lines in just the last few years, we have built none. Russia and China are signing agreements to build rail line tunnels from Siberia to Alaska, but we have no plans to meet these lines when they hit the United States. Southwestern United States is undergoing terrible drought conditions, threatening our food supply. But we have no new water projects of any significance over the last 50 years. California has abandoned 500,000 acres of farmland, and the cattle herd is at a 65-year low. We haven't addressed some of these major problems. The problem that I was discussing when I was first at Atlanta and met with the LaRouche group was the problem of the security of our electric grid from extreme solar storms and electromagnetic pulse weapons of foreign nations and devices of terrorists. One strike from the sun, which is 100% probable and could come at any time and in fact is somewhat overdue, could take down our entire national grid. And it would be down for months or years. And we are without replacements for the major transformers upon which it depends. We've left such projects undone. And although it's been tried for years to get it past Congress, I'm happy to announce I was able to get it through Maine. That doesn't mean it doesn't continue to be somewhat of a struggle to make sure the utility companies actually got the protections on. But the point is, at least in this one case, I knew a little bit more about how the infrastructure has been ignored and obvious solutions have not been employed. Inexpensive solutions, the kind of fixes that we're talking about would cost the average household less than $2 a year for 4 or 5 years to protect us from totally being destroyed by such an event. Instead, we have the problem of the banks and the investment, the commercial bankers and the investment bankers having been able to do the work that each one used to do separately. In the process, apparently looking over and seeing that the grass looked greener in the other yard, they've made kind of a mess of the yard. both of them. So now we have banks that are gambling, instead of investing in such things as infrastructure, economic development, Main Street, instead of Wall Street, and we are left with the job of bailing them out, which we've been doing, billions and billions of dollars a month. And the peculiar thing about it that I've come to understand is that while we've bailed them out, they have not written their losses down. They have not taken those losses. They've kept the assets there on their books, causing the rest of the country, or our average folks, to think that the banks are in better shape than they are. And in fact, it appears that they have, their assets have grown about 30% over the last 5 years. These are at artificially inflated values. And they're kept artificially inflated so as not to worry us poor souls that think our money's okay in their care. One of the things that I also noticed as I've just been campaigning and going around communities in Maine, there are so many homes that are abandoned. They're empty, and they have been for a long time, and their neighbors know it. Whether they're foreclosures or people have left them, they stand empty. And that brought it home to me a little bit more about what the banking crisis was, because one would ask oneself, well, why don't the banks at least rent them to the depressed owners or others at some price that is reasonable? Well, maybe because it's to their advantage to leave them sitting there, assessed at their a former valuation rather than what they really are now in depressed circumstances. It's all really very cynical and really just more than one can bear as you look from one place to the next. We worry about bailing out these banks that are so disconnected from reality. But now the problem we also face is bailing in. So that in this case, the banks may very well come to the point of seizing our own accounts to help pay off their debts, their problems, our investments, our bonds, as it was done in Cyprus and Spain, and the people lost their deposits. What kind of upside-down sort of thinking is that? And terribly, terribly depressing. Again, as I'm walking around campaigning, talking to people, they talk about the loss of their pension funds. And they talk to me about the loss, the decrease in the amount of their state pension funds, teachers' pension funds, things that were promised to them. And what else is that except the states responding to a need that they have as a result of not having the wealth to move forward, no investment in infrastructure, in business, education, science. I work with some fabulous scientists in some of the different things that I do. And the one that I am closest to, rely on the most, is multiple PhDs. He probably is a genius. And he talks about how our best scientists are leaving this country because we're not investing in them and in good science and in doing the best things that we can do. And all this is just making a circular problem here where if we can't afford to invest in science, then we're really not going to advance. So as I became more familiar with this problem about abandoning Glass-Steagall, I've certainly joined hands with those from the LaRouche people at the Schiller Institute in support of the bills now before Congress, which would immediately break up the big Wall Street banks and only protect commercial banking. Instead of the investment banking being covered by what only commercial banking should be, that kind of insurance, they would have to fend for themselves. They don't like that. That's why when I was in Atlanta, they approached me and tried to talk me out of making my statement to the banking committee there on returning to Glass-Steagall. They came up to me in the lobby and said, "You are about to go on a national stage. Are you sure you want to do this?" It was very scary. Of course I said yes. And they said, "Well, why didn't you contact us? Why didn't you call us? Why before you took this step?" Unfortunately, it was sad to me that there are actually bankers from Maine. They were representing J.P. Morgan and Bank of America, but they have their banks in Maine, and they told me how they had. I think it was Bank of America has about 1,300 employees in Maine, and 8 in my town. So it was overwhelming. My hope and belief is that if we return to Glass-Steagall, that those people who are employed in banks in Maine and elsewhere around the country will be more secure, not less, as a result, as people understand the banks are now working for them. So I'll continue to work with legislators that I know and try to push these issues. It hasn't been easy. I seem to come up with different things that are problematic to our leadership. And in fact, all I can really say at this point, because I don't know what my future is, I'm in fact a state representative, not a state senator. I'm term limited out this year. And the campaign that I just referred to was a campaign for state senate, which I just lost by 19 votes. But the stunning thing was that the leadership of my Democratic Party was stunned that I came that close. They were stunned that so many people in the district supported the message that I had, which had to do with things such as banking reform, Glass-Steagall, protection of the electric grid, and some other things, and pushing back against lobbyists and special interests that patrol the halls of our state capitals. So in closing, I guess I would just exhort everyone here to continue to reach out and remind your own members of Congress and state legislatures of the importance of returning to Glass-Steagall and some of the other subjects that have been covered here today. Don't forget about the states, because in fact, the states may be the places where you can make more progress faster, not the whole thing that we'd like through the whole nation. But perhaps we can shame Congress if we pick off some states like Maine and others one at a time. Thank you very much for your attention.
Perfect.